Are they bad things to have, illusions?
They're wonderful things. Don't ever part with them. When your illusions have gone, you may still exist, but you've ceased to live.
He was slinging pawns at a B&B when he had an epiphany. A naked pawn in about time too, about not playing D&D. It was free throw all, and I heard him say, keep off my borderlands. But just sit back and let Spencer do his trick, cause you're incapable hands.
Hello, and welcome to Keep Off the Borderlands, a podcast about RPGs and stuff. My name's Spencer, aka Free Thrall, and in this episode, I'll be responding to some great feedback following episode 249, but is it really role-playing? But before I get into all that, here's my good buddy, Joe Richter of Hindsightless, with some feedback regarding the more recent Bastion Social. Take it away, Joe.
Spencer and Barney and Free Thrall and Ludus, Bastion Land Social, so here are your kudos. You are two of my favorite things, Shadow Knight and Iron and pigs in chastity belts. I'm getting lost, so I'm gonna stop singing now. Two of my favorite people in the same place at the same time, so I had to bust out a super sick rhyme piece. Okay, now that I'm done completely embarrassing myself, I wanted to say that, like I said, I really enjoyed this episode just hearing the two of you together again, but I also really liked what I heard about Mythic Bastion Land, and I have to say, from what I've heard so far, and this might not surprise anybody, I think Mythic Bastion Land is my favorite of the Bastion Land so far. Now, I don't have a whole lot of experience with Electric Bastion Land. I did play and run Into the Odd, but not for very long, and only once, but I enjoyed it. That said, this Mythic Bastion Land, I really like. I think all those tables and all those abilities and the omens and the people and the, like, the origins of the swords and everything, all that, that was cool stuff. I really, 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 really like that. So thank you. I might have to, if the Kickstarter is still open, I might have to look into it. We'll see. Maybe. Anyway, thanks again, Spencer. Always great to hear from you. Always even greater now that it's so rare to hear from Barney. And I hope you guys do more of these. So take it easy. Peace, Trout.
Thank you, Joe. Now, is the peace trout a heraldic beast that I'm not familiar with? You know, a mythical creature like the Salmon of Knowledge that turned Finn McCool into the ultimate hero of Irish legend? And I think I know why you like the sound of Mythic Bastion Land. It's because it's got feats in it, hasn't it? I'm joking, of course, but I do see some parallels with, say, something like Beyond the Wall, with all those kind of built-in hooks, prompts, challenges, goals that will aid both prep and improvisational play. On one level, it presents a more bounded, more structured kind of play, but at the same time allows for a lot more improv and freedom within that. I mean, it's all, you know, left pretty mysterious. None of it's particularly prescriptive. A big feature of the game that I didn't touch on is the passing of time. This is done in a very abstract manner, as you might imagine, but it allows for a more chronicled style of play where you can choose to have adventures taking place months apart, years apart, or even generations apart. Now, it was quite clear there were things that came up while we were reading through those rules that I'm not sure we explained or understood particularly well, but something that definitely wasn't true, when I spoke about there being an official character sheet, Barney was surprised to hear that Chris had created one, and he was right to be surprised, because there isn't one in the book. The character sheet that I'd printed off was created by Manor Dawn and is available on their Itch page, but it's so well done and in keeping with the style of the book that I'd forgotten that I'd actually got it from elsewhere. Anyway, thanks again for your message, Joe. I really enjoyed that. And I'm glad you loved the episode. I certainly enjoyed making it. And I really need to see if I can persuade Barney to join me more often, I think.
Hi, Spencer. It's Anthony calling in from the Casting Shadows podcast. In the road, I really enjoyed your episode about is it really role play? It's nice that people are finding Jean-Francois' podcast, Same Old Cheese podcast, and are responding and making episodes about what they find there. That's cool. My call in to you is, I wonder about the title. You're asking, is it really role play? Which is a nice, juicy title. My question would be, is it really a model? And as a counterpoint, perhaps it's instead clear procedures for a particular approach to play, one that they very much enjoy. But is it a model of play?
Thank you, Anthony. Anthony Runeslinger Boyd there of the Casting Shadows podcast. And yes, is it a model? Good question. Well, the reason I use the term model is that that was how it was presented by Same Old G. The way Same Old G spoke about it, I think, was much more in terms of using it as a model than certainly than how I was considering it. I guess the way I was thinking about it was more of aspects, categories or modes of play, perhaps. I also realised that in trying to understand these modes of play, I'd reframed them quite drastically as sort of social aspects, system aspects, game aspects, and role-playing aspects. On further reflection and listening to others discussing it, I realised that the categorisation wasn't so clear-cut as that. When reassessing how the advocates of 4D actually categorised these things, a lot of what was highlighted in one category is clearly present in some of the other categories, and some of the grouping of behaviours seemed a little bit arbitrary, I think it's fair to say, especially when you look at the one-dimensional category. It appears to just be a list of things considered most problematic. And what I wanted to avoid when talking about this initially was suggesting any kind of hierarchy to the aspects or categories. What interested me about this form of categorization is how it might, I guess, deepen my own experience of role playing. I have very little interest in wanting to change how anybody else chooses to play. I have to say that I'm also thinking about this in regards to my own involvement in actual plays. I'm currently playing a character in a Call of Cthulhu campaign who I would say was kind of against type for me, and I'm wrestling with that somewhat. I do feel that perhaps I'm not doing the character justice because there's maybe a little bit too much of me coming through. Also, I have to say that this is the first time I'm actually hearing myself say this. Bit of a revelation to me that that's what's motivating my interest in all this. So thank you for that, Anthony. Thank you for prompting that train of thought that I find myself abhorred. Thanks very much for the call.
Hey, Spencer, it's Shay, just calling from Roleplay Rescue. Wanted to thank you for your episode but is it really role-playing? Talking about four-dimensional role-playing, which is a phrase that I'm not familiar with. But I wanted to call him because he sort of seemed to equate me and others with this approach play, which I've never heard of. So I wanted to sort of just put a space there. To be honest with you, I think it's a pretty flawed analogy. And this is the reason, if I wanted to be pedantic about a fourth dimension of role playing, I would want to point out that it is dependent upon the other three to support it. Dimensionality is not something you can remove one of the dimensions and have the others stand without, except, of course, perhaps in the first dimension. But all dimensionality, to be honest with you, is a intellectual abstraction. So, you know, it's not a real thing. So that would be the first thing I'd want to say. And I think if there are people out there getting frustrated about people not going deep enough into their play, then, well, you need to chill out as far as I'm concerned. I don't want this idea of there's a one true way. I'm really glad that perhaps me, Daniel, and Anthony have helped you to kind of move past the idea of role-playing as, you know, acting and voice acting, and understanding that this idea of in character as character is something, you know, perhaps a little different. But yeah, I don't subscribe to this 4D thing.
Hi, Che. Che Webster there of Roleplay Rescue. And thanks for bringing that up, because I didn't mean to imply that you, Daniel Jones, or Anthony were proponents of this particular approach, only that I saw parallels with exploration of deepening of character and that in-world immersion. As I say, the episode was very much about me deepening my own experience rather than promoting any particular kind of approach. Oddly, this fourth dimension approach actually requires players to contribute narratively beyond what's possible when approaching the game strictly from a in-character role-play perspective. What's interesting about that is how it kind of works against immersion, in character at least. I can understand why it's incorporated into this approach, because it does help to maintain the flow of play and helps to obfuscate those other dimensions. I believe this is what's being referred to when they use the term cinematic. The elements of the game being concealed, like references to roles or questions being asked of the GM, are akin to, say, like a boom mic coming into shot, or perhaps an actor inadvertently looking into the camera. Anything that would break the illusion for those watching, rather than this being about a more immersive experience for the player, it seems to be considering immersion regarding the audience and that kind of suspension of disbelief. The focus, rather than depth of experience, is much more about the surface of play. It's all about what can be observed. So it doesn't actually really say anything about player experience. Also, that's a great point about the nature of the concept of dimensions that necessitate each one being foundational for the next, and the idea that somehow those foundations could be removed does make little sense. You work through those levels at the outset of play, and what you're seeking to do is spend as much time as possible in that fourth realm while making as little reference to what lies beneath as possible. All those levels are still very much in place, supporting play, but they remain concealed during play.
I guess what I would want to say is that you can kind of go stage by stage deeper. I was recently playing Hero Quest, the old board game, and in that you play the role of a character, but you don't play in role particularly. You know, you have a barbarian, for example, and what you're focused on is moving around a board. As far as I can tell, role-playing games first removed the board and brought things into the imagination. And then from there, I think people have spent time trying to go deeper into playing as their character. And then from there, some people like to try and roll, not plot, just come from the position of their character's point of view and make decisions as their character, but also to try and imagine being and like really immerse themselves into the other world. And that's where I like to go, but I don't go there often, simply because there are barriers to that. And, you know, like the fact that other people don't play that way, for starters. But it's not something to be frustrated about. It's just something to appreciate that I have an appetite that's different, but also that I'm on a journey perhaps that wants to go there more often. And that's okay. You know, like it is not about there being a best way of playing or anything like that. So yeah, I just wanted to call and kind of clarify that and say, like, you know, I'm on a journey, and I like playing HeroQuest just as much as I like playing in an otherworld immersed game. Game on.
Thanks for those messages, Che. And all I really have to add is that I'm in complete agreement with you there. Thanks again. On the subject of playing Call of Cthulhu, I was involved in a very interesting experiment which may have some relevance here. Andy Goodman, GM extraordinaire, the man behind Grizzly Peaks Radio, proposed a scenario where we tried to ramp up the horror as a group. This was more about considering things from that audience perspective rather than any thoughts about character immersion. But because we were focusing on the drama and the impact of the situations on the characters, there were certain moments in there that I felt more deeply in character than I think I've felt in any other game. Another part of these sessions was that we were often separated as characters, isolation being a common horror trope, which meant that there was one-on-one moments with the GM. This certainly allowed for a deeper experience and allowed, well, I felt allowed the players more breathing space between some pretty intense scenes. I mean, I imagine this was pretty hard going for the GM, who didn't have the benefit of those breaks. Beyond that, I haven't really been involved in any kind of group experiment directly relating to immersion, in-character immersion. Having said that, I do like Safer's take on immersive play. That's Safer of Safer Fantasy Crafting, who made some very interesting calls into Anthony on the Casting Shadows podcast. The in-world immersion and in-character play for him was very much about emotional investment in the character, in the world, in the present situation of play. It was a very personal thing that doesn't rely on prescriptive adherence to certain levels of play or the behaviour of other players so much. Constantly having to rethink what you are about to say out of fear of potentially disrupting somebody else's sense of immersion seems like a barrier to engaging with your own sense of immersion, if anything. Although I get what's being proposed is that players practice this approach until it becomes, you know, more natural to them. But insisting on everyone at the table striving to maintain this level of play, it just doesn't sound all that enjoyable to me. Sure, there are behaviours that can disrupt a game. Having your head in your phone or being in a noisy environment, having a poor internet connection. But these things are not matters of playstyle. In conclusion, this whole fourth dimension of play concept does seem to be about how play is presented rather than how play actually feels for a player. This is why player-created content is incorporated into what constitutes role play here, because the focus is on creating a seamless facade, as opposed to having anything to do with immersive player experience. If I didn't mention it earlier, I watched a really well-considered critique of four-dimensional play that Ivan Mike 1968 posted up on YouTube that echoes and no doubt informed some of what I've spoken about here. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Also, that Call of Cthulhu actual play experiment I referred to is called Isla de la Muerte. That's on Grizzly Peaks Radio, if folks want to check it out. Just to be clear, that's not an example of either four-dimensional play or in-world immersion. The aim there was to ramp up the sense of horror for the listener, really. Were we successful? Well, I'll let you be the judge of that. I do sometimes find myself wondering exactly what I'm doing when I get myself involved in this play theory stuff. I do enjoy musing about it, but at the same time, it's almost as if it were a separate activity to gaming for me. As Garth Elgar once said, I like to play. Before I go, I do want to remind you of this month's movie night choice, which is dedicated to the former host and home of Movie Monday, Jason Connolly and the Nerds RPG Variety Cast, which recently aired its final episode, although Jason did tease the possibility of its return. That movie is Albert Pun's 1982 feature, The Sword and the Sorcerer. The episode will air on the 27th of May, so entries before the 25th, please, if you want to ensure being featured on the show. You can submit those messages by emailing me at spencer.freethrall@gmail.com or by finding me on Discord, as detailed in the show notes. Well, that's quite enough from me. Thank you very much for listening. I really appreciate all the messages I receive. If you'd like to contact me, any questions, feedback or requests, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an audio message via speakpipe.com/keepofftheborderlands or one word, or you can email me at spencer.freethrall@gmail.com. You can also find me on Discord and a variety of other places as detailed in the show notes. If you enjoy the show, a review or a share would be much appreciated. The music for Keep Off the Borderlands is provided by the multi-talented Mr. TJ Drennan. And it just remains for me to say, take it away, TJ.
Warning, if celebrating the sound of dice hitting the table and pondering the meaning of the many acronyms within your player's handbook doesn't cure that burning sensation, please see your doctor.